And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
It's sort of a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And we got another great show for you this evening. We have Marion Rudnick, and he's an astronomer. He was a former NASA astronomer, very talented. He does all kinds of things. He's an artist as well. And we are going to be talking UFOs with him after the updates with Alejandro Rojas coming up in a minute. Just to let you know, over at podcastufo.com, we do have another blog up this week. It's UFOs in the Hudson River Valley. That's a great blog written by Charles Lear, so check that out if you would. And I want to thank everyone that supports the show. Anyone can. We're over at Patreon. We also have a subscription system on our website, so anyone can sign up for that at only $2 or more a month and get to access the entire shows, full shows, on a media player, any type of media player. And so that's over there. Also, we have a Facebook page. Check that out. There's Peggy helps us up out over there, and we have a new story every day posted up there, UFO or space related. So that's it. We have a little bit of static in the background. I'll talk about that later. There's nothing I can do about it. I hope that's not going to upset the audio file out there, but it is what it is. And Alejandro Rojas, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good to have you. Good to have you.
Yes. Happy to be here. Lucky to be here. I'm running around and I'm in complete crazy town right now because, of course, the conference is just a little ways from now. In fact, we just got back from the hotel and it's such an awesome place. I think people are going to really like it. And this is what's really cool. So, sorry, I don't have much UFO news, so it's going to have to be some UFO Congress news. But Martin said that was okay.
People. That's okay, so. Yes.
But this is fun. I made some posters covering six really important UFO cases, and I could send you a picture, I guess. I could text it to you. But I made a model of the Phoenix Lights. So I have the Phoenix Lights, a poster on that, a poster on Roswell. Let's see, what was the other one? The 1952 Washington, D.C. sightings. Then the Nimitz case, the 2008 Chicago O'Hare, and then the Roosevelt in 2014-15. So I thought it'd be really cool to cover some really credible cases and make some neat posters. And my buddy, Doug Smythe, who runs PhoenixShaving.com, actually created those for me. So some of you, if you've been to AlienCon, you probably saw him in the booth next to us. He's a guy who wears has a beard and wears funny costumes sometimes, but really cool dude. In fact, I don't think you've met him yet. Have you, Martin?
It doesn't ring a bell. At first, when I thought you were talking about this, I thought you were talking about the artist that he was on The Simpsons, you know, did The Simpsons.
Oh, Dale. Oh, you know what he did, though? He did make me a jar. So I'm a big fan of Futurama. And Futurama, remember, all the older people, their heads were preserved in jars, and they talk. So he did that kind of art for me, which is kind of cool. But Dale's great. But Dale and my friend Doug, who made these posters, will be vendors at the UFO Congress, so you can meet them there. And Dale is selling. He's going to be doing caricatures of people, and he's going to be making those people's heads in jars. And of course, Dale, if you're not aware, is works for The Simpsons as a character designer, and so they're made by pros.
Yeah, awesome. He's a great guy too. But he's so, awesome. What is going on as far as you said you're at the hotel? I can't wait. It's just going to be a couple of days. I'm going to be hopping over there to Arizona.
I was at the hotel earlier today. Now I'm at my house. Yeah.
And so for the person that has not checked out your website yet, tell us a little bit about the speakers that are going to be there.
It's a long list. I mean, we have over 25 lectures and events. I think one fun one is that we're going to have Richard Dolan and Tracy Garbett. You know, there's some KGRAers there, and that's going to be a lot of fun because they actually got engaged at the UFO Congress a couple years ago. In fact, I posted the picture. I was walking by outside, you know, running from here to there. And I said, hi. And they're like, we just got engaged. And so I took a picture. And now they're married. And it's fun that we're going to have Tracy talk. And I'm super excited.
Wow. Well, you know when you have arrived if you get engaged at the UFO Congress. Are you there, Alejandro?
Nick Pope snuck away and got married at the Congress like 3 or 4 years ago.
See, really? How about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so funny.
There's some type of magic going on there.
Yeah.
I better be careful because I'm going to be there by myself, you know? You never know.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-oh.
Yeah, how far is that from Las Vegas?
No. Not too far. 4 hours.
Yeah, okay. So tell us some more about some of the guests that are going to be there.
Okay. So I'm excited. 1897, there was a flap of UFOs.
Oh, we have frozen Skype. Let's see. Alejandro, I don't know if you can hear me right now. You're currently frozen. So we'll see if you come back. And we may just have to switch right into talking to our guest. But right now, I just see him up on Skype, and that's it. So Marian Rudnick, he is an astronomer, artist, planetary scientist, and author, all rolled into one. Marian put himself through school by working in the aerospace industry as a machinist and precision assembler for military and spacecraft components. So with a degree in planetary geology in hand, he began to work at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So it looks like Alejandro is out. I heard about our guest through one of our listeners. He told me that he heard him on another show and thought he was really interesting. So we'll find that out. I guess that's it for the updates with him today. So if you would, if you want to just check out the UFO Congress website, you can see all the people that are going to be there for speakers, and the whole schedule's up there as well. Also, if anyone is going to show up there, I would love to meet you if you listen to the show. But I'll be working behind the scenes quite a bit of the time, but not always. I will be also in the lobby a lot anyway. Anyone that listens to the show, if you're going to be there, please do try to look me up. You can also email me at martin@podcastufo.com. And it would be fun to – I love meeting listeners to the show. It's always fun. So, Marian, I hope you can hear me. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I'm here. Are you there?
Yes. We are live.
Nice to be on.
Yes.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure. And sure. I do appreciate you your willingness, and I want to talk about your background and what gets you interested in the topic. So – let's talk about it. When you were young, did you always have like an interest in space to begin with?
Yeah, I was your typical kid who wanted to become an astronaut, and actually later tried for the astronaut program. I got into the last group of 100 on one of the astronaut tryouts for the shuttle program. So at a young age, I was already sort of pre-programmed for space, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was like a lot of kids, you know, the whole thing with science fiction and flying saucers and UFOs and everything. And I got my copy of Chariots of the Gods, of course, and all that. And then all that sort of faded away very quickly, you know, as my life progressed.
Uh-huh. And so how did you – I mean, getting into NASA is not an easy thing to do. How did that all come about?
Well, we live here, you know, where I am, not far from JPL, from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I've always been interested, and so I was lucky in the sense that I did, even as a kid, I sort of found out how things worked, and before I knew it, I was taking classes, summer classes at Caltech in astronomy for 3 years, and then the fourth summer I did biochemistry. And I spent my Saturdays also at Caltech taking Saturday classes during the regular part of the school year. So while everybody else was going to the beach, I was actually at Caltech, you know, studying astronomy. Hmm. So Caltech sort of put me in line with JPL. And by the time I was in college, I got a my advisor was somebody from JPL who put me on a project working on stuff for Saturn's moon Iapetus, which became sort of my my senior project. And before I knew it, I was interning at JPL while working, having put myself through you know, through school, doing the aerospace jobs, and also, you know, helping manage a theater at night. I had like multiple jobs. It was an insane time in my life. But then I squeezed in, like I said, doing internships at JPL, and some wonderful people there really, really gave me a chance. Dr. David Pieri, who's a renowned volcanologist, put me on doing Europa work and everything. I started mapping ice fractures on Jupiter's moon Europa. Hmm. And Dr. Tim Parker, he wasn't doctor then, he is now, he was doing Mars mapping, and so doing Alba Patera and a lot of other areas and stuff. And there was a lot of lava tubes that that they were interested in. And the lava tubes had these collapsed pit features. So you see these long strings of dots and everything that, that would go across the Martian landscape. And those are actually collapsed pits that opened into the lava tubes below. So lucky me, got to map all that stuff out, you know, for him. But it was great. It put me in the right place at the right time. And the people were really, really wonderful. And before I knew it, I found myself all of a sudden as an astronomer, you know, working at Palomar
wow.
because of them.
Yeah. I love, you know, to read articles about space and different things. And, you know, the black holes, that's there's I'm sure you probably saw the most recent where they think they saw a black hole swallow a star. I think this is just the last couple of days. But one of the things that I've always wondered, and maybe have an answer for this, is when a black hole, like, crushes in on itself, is it basically, like, for instance, this is all layman terms, by the way, but say an atom has so much space in it.
No, I'm just going to throw equations at you. No, I'm
but say an atom has so much space in it, like if you condensed every atom in your body, I think you'd be the size of an ant or something like that, or even maybe even smaller. So is that kind of what happens to a black hole? Is everything just gets condensed right down to the nuclear level? I mean,
it's almost like, if you could think of it, it's like infinitely crushed to the point, you know, where all the space is almost removed. And the black hole itself, I mean, people think of it, oh, look, that black hole is huge, look how giant it is. Actually, it's not that the black hole is huge, it's the area or the extent of its influence that's big. The black hole itself is what they call a singularity. It's just this tiny dot in the center of it, if you want to think of it that way, and it's just swallowing stuff up, and everything is inside that little dot. But the stronger it is, the greater its area of influence, the greater the area of darkness around it. And the edge of that area is, of course, you've heard people throw around the term the event horizon, which is basically mm-hmm. sort of that border where once you reach that edge, light can't escape anymore. You'd have to be traveling faster than the speed of light to escape. So if you cross that edge, you're in, and you're not going to come out. And that's why it appears black. So you've got this giant black sphere, but that's really not the black hole itself. The black hole itself is just the point in the center, the singularity, and that's just the area that surrounds it.
Do you think that...
You know, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Do you think that galaxies are basically formed by a black hole in the center? I mean, it seems like they've been finding a lot of them in the center of galaxies.
It's interesting, but not all galaxies have black holes in them, so it sort of begs the question. And then there's also this whole question of structures that are complex versus those that are not. And so in some cases, things appear to be backwards. So galactic physics is sort of at a... Not really at a nexus. It's actually at a really an exciting place because there's a lot of things being discovered, and really don't know what forms you know the crux or the process that forms galactic, you know, galactic formation. What drives galactic formation is a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. So it could be black holes, but I think it's probably a mix. I think nature is usually messy, and it's not usually just one process, but a combination of things. And so I think we'll find that black holes are a part of a mix, and then something else that's probably new and exciting that has yet to be discovered will be part of the rest of the answers.
When you worked at NASA and, you know, spoke with your colleagues, what was the general consensus about the possibility of intelligent life on other planets and somewhere in the galaxies out there?
Yeah. They're all focused on what I like to call bugs, but it's basically just germs. And this is, mm-hmm. I think, the problem. What they don't understand is that they're waiting for, like, you know, the fact that they can finally confirm that, oh, we found, you know, definite proof that, you know, we've got now biological activity. There is algae of some kind, exotic algae on Mars.
Uh-huh.
You can just uh-huh. hear the public yawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just it'll be deafening silence. It'll be one day of news, and then everybody will move on and not care. They're so focused on that except for maybe the SETI people, I don't think they realize that the people are yearning for something more. And the consensus generally is that there is life out there, but a lot of these people just think that the distances are too great, and why is there so much silence? The radio telescopes are turned outward, and we don't hear anything. But there's a lot of things that could be driving those kind of things, and one of them is the fact that we think that it's sort of that centrism, you know, that we have, you know, the Earth is the center of the universe, and the solar system, or the sun is the center of the universe. Now we think that, you know, things are centered around, you know, us just in general, or that everybody uses radio waves, and who knows, other civilizations may be communicating in just completely, completely unknown ways. So we may be listening, but we may be listening to dead airspace, because that's not where everybody's broadcasting.
Yeah, I've actually had Seth Shostak from SETI on this show. And by the way, he's coming up sometime in October again. And, you know, one of the things I said to him was...
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, but we were in a debate on UFOs the first time. I don't know where we're going to go this time. But I did say to him something along the lines of, why radio waves? I mean, what you just said there a minute ago, they may be communicating in ways that we have not thought of or whatever. And then he said, well, it's better than – basically, he said it's better than doing nothing or looking for nothing. I can't really disagree with that. But I think that what is going to happen is I really think that, for instance, when the James Webb telescope gets out there, perhaps we're going to get better and better technology that even – we'll have even better technologies than what SETI can do in the future. I don't know, as far as actually connecting. What are your thoughts, basically, on that?
Well, you should pose the question to Seth. He did an interview for NBC a while ago where he was quoted as, the minute somebody tells me, and I'm paraphrasing, generally speaking, that when it comes to UFOs, that I know what I saw, that he therefore knows that it's total BS, and then he shuts down. He knows that, well, that's it. You know, there's no such thing as UFOs or aliens and everything. And the interview is just very much a shutdown kind of event. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's very unfortunate, you know, and I don't know what drove him to say that. And you might ask him that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember asking him something along the lines, like, if all of a sudden we found out that UFOs were actually intelligence from another planet on our planet itself, how would your funding go? And I think I'm going to probably bring that up again because I can't
remember. You read my mind.
Yeah. That it's a threat, you know, and you can almost see through part of what he does is that is kind of a threat for, you know, his well-being. I guess it's better than them doing nothing. You know, I have to agree with him about that. At least, you know, someone has an interest and they're looking. But, you know, it is when I brought up, you know, the fact that, you know, maybe they have some type of technology that we've never thought of and can travel, you know, traverse the space that's so vast. You know, I still believe if that's actually what is showing up here, that is a possibility. I can't say for sure.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, look at neutrinos, right, that, you know, they go through everything, whatever.
Yeah.
What if you had a neutrino transmission system? You know, I'm just throwing something wild out there, but
uh-huh.
The idea is to think out of the box. And I agree that maybe that, like what he says as far as it's better than doing nothing. But I also think that SETI should be more transparent. I know that they hit on radio signals sometimes and all that. They're not quick to divulge the locations of the stars where they think that they might have heard something. I think that they really need to work on their transparency. The first thing they do is if they think they hear something, they should throw that out to the whole astronomical community and the public at large. Let everybody listen in. Let's see what there is to hear. You know?
I thought that's what I thought he said they did something like that. But that's not so, as far as you know?
No, not completely, no. I know that they have projects where they have people listen to, you know, files and everything that they've archived to listen for things, just like they have also where they have things, people look at, you know, files for imagery also, where they have these internet, you know, group things. You know, I'm not familiar with the term, but you know what I'm talking about, where they sort of have the public participate as sort of public astronomers, public scientists and everything, and take part in
mm-hmm.
and going through data. So that's one thing, but when they've got cutting-edge stuff and they actually pick up a signal, why not, you know, tell people about it instead of, oh, we have to vet it, we have to this. Let people take a look, you know, let people hear, let people see what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've probably heard, you know, you just talked about a big yawn if they find, you know, like a bacteria on Mars or something like that, which
right.
I agree. It's the news.
The exogerm.
Yeah. The way news is so ephemeral today anyway, you know, big stories happen and, you know, they're gone so quickly. I do agree with you. I think, however, if they found intelligent life, it would be different. But we all grew up hearing that, you know, the world would crash and religions would crumble and all that. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I think people are more adjusted today than they have been, you know, previously. To the fact that we may find something.
I agree with you, but at the same time, I've had a couple of really, since I've had my sighting, kind of eye-opening events, just even within my family, if I can share. Because I was sort of the same, I have the same feeling as you do, that I think generally speaking, I think that's true for the general public. I think they hunger for this, they agree, they know that there is something out there, and that, you know, they want to know, and they want to know what it is. But there's a small group that you would be surprised. And so this example I'm going to give, I'm not going to say who in my family, but it is a spouse of somebody in my family, a gentleman, a man, adult man, who you'd think, oh, this would, you know, would be the same way to what we're discussing. So here's an adult person, and I show this person my sighting and some of the things that I found, and you have not, I literally witnessed this person melt down and shake in anger and walk outside, fist clenched, and literally have a mental breakdown to where someone in my family, who is his wife, had to calm him down, and this became a non-subject which we could never bring up around this person ever again because he's
wow.
ready to melt down.
Wow, that is...
Which I was just, like, floored.
That is really amazing. So we are...
Yeah, and then the minute I showed him that, look, but this is all, I don't believe it. I'm like, okay, but this person was with me when this happened. I have a picture when we were this and this, when this happened. We saw this. Look at this photograph. So it's all lies. It's all lies. It's all... I don't believe a word of it. And he's just, like, shaking and shaking and red, and veins are coming out, and he just walks outside, and he just... I'm like, oh, my God, this person... We're going to have to call 911 if I don't back off.
Wow.
You know, and I'm not even doing anything.
Isn't that amazing? That
so,
most people don't have that reaction. But there are some people that...
It was a visceral reaction, which is amazing.
Yeah, there's some people that certainly will. All right, so we are going to head into break right now. So hang in, everyone. We'll be right back right after these messages. You said you're near the Jet Propulsion Lab... and so you live in Southern California? And
yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So what's it like for sightings since you've had your sighting? Well, I don't want to talk about that right now, but when we go back on the full layer.
Right.
We'll talk about that. But have you, since you had your sighting, have you paid attention and researched about the sightings? Because California is a real big sighting state.
I know very little about other sightings, but except for, and actually this is a good discussion when we come back on live, is that I'm so immersed in what's going on with me, but I now, through my Facebook and Twitter, am getting streams of people who are now seeing, validating what I see, seeing the same thing all along these mountainsides here. So this is something we should discuss. Something is definitely going on, and my Facebook and Twitter just get overloaded with people who are terrified to speak up but are willing to talk to me, but only privately through private messaging.
Huh. Wow. So what is the actual general area? Is it Orange County in that area? I'm not really sure where the lab is.
No, not at all. Actually, it's the Pasadena area.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
JPL is in the Pasadena area, in the upper Pasadena area, and I'm just east of that,
along the
San Gabriel Mountains, and nestled along the under the mountains, literally, in the foothills.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful around there. I've spent a bit of time out there.
Very, very.
Yeah, yeah. And have you been there all your life?
Yeah, most of my life. I grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
I am a New York transplant and everything, but then my parents did the I Love Lucy thing of driving across country when I was like 3 or 4 years old.
And that was it. Wow. I think we're going back on
race,
right?
And that was it, and I've been here ever since.
In 1 minute.
Okay. Oh, 1 minute. Okay, very good.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
I went ahead and added another one because of my flub.
Okay, no problem. All right. So, yeah, I think basically California is the most populated state in the United States, and there's a couple of reasons why it's number one in the category of UFO sightings in general, and one of them is the fine weather. That's, you know, there's a lot of really nice weather out there, and secondly, you know, is the population. So you have those two things combined, but you have some really interesting areas. Catalina Island out that way, there's a lot of sightings, and you go all the way to Shasta Mountain in Northern California. There's sightings up that way. There's a lot going on in the state in general. All right, welcome back. My guest tonight is Marianne Rudnick, and we were talking just before the break about a relative of his that just went off the rails when he was talking about his UFO sighting. Did you talk to your other relatives and try to figure out why he went so crazy about that situation?
There's simply everybody doesn't want to touch the issue as far as dealing with him, because they don't want him to be disturbed anymore. And so the relative that's of mine that's married to him, she asked that we all sort of respect that, you know, kind of like put up sort of a wall around him and not breach that subject around him at all.
Sure.
Because she's terrified of literally having a divorce on her hands. That's how violently he reacted.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
And I mean violently in a sense, because he was literally shaking and he has his fists clenched.
Isn't that something? I don't think I've ever heard of a reaction like that. I've heard people laugh. I've seen where people will just, you know, brush it off and think it's silly and, you know, think it's a big joke and stuff like that, but I've never seen anyone get upset about it. And it makes me wonder, and this may have nothing to do with anything, but is he a very religious person? Do you know?
He is a Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I know that, that I guess you could almost say that Mormonism is sort of almost a space-based religion,
right?
You know, because of the, you know, the whole their whole history of John Smith and everything that happened. But I don't know what his thoughts are about his religion, and I don't know how much the religion plays a part of his reaction. So I'm just going to leave it sort of stand as is. I don't know, and I have no way of now at this point everything of finding out, since it's become sort of a non-subject. And I am sure his wife, has talked to him at some point, but I don't know even how much that, because he just shut down. This is like the last time I saw him, it was as if nothing happened, and this is simply not to be spoken about.
Right.
It's very weird.
Wow, yeah. All right, so let's talk about where you were working and what you were involved in. I know that you had a car you wanted to get a picture of and somewhere in downtown L.A. or somewhere right after New Year's Eve, I think.
Not downtown. It's actually, everything is sort of centered in downtown beautiful Monrovia.
Okay.
Monrovia, California, mm-hmm. which is close by here in the Pasadena area, like we were talking about during the break, not far from JPL. So this is all sort of like a space hub. All of this is where all the aerospace industry was focused during the heyday, during Apollo and even during the Viking and Voyager missions and all that. This is where all the action was and all the companies were here. But Monrovia had its own contributions. But the McDiner is a sort of like a retro 50s style version of a McDonald's. There were a bunch of them across the country, and this was sort of the last one standing. And they play like retro 50s, 60s music and all that kind of stuff. So it's in Monrovia, within eyesight of the foothills that are here, where a lot of stuff is happening. And you were asking about what happened. It was New Year's. New Year's is sort of different here in California in the sense that when New Year's happens on when New Year's Day is on a Sunday, normally we have on New Year's Day we have the Rose Bowl, the Rose Parade in the morning, and the Rose Bowl in the afternoon, the games. But it was sort of a unique lineup of events on the day of my sighting, because what happened was, none of that happened on that day, on January 1st. Instead, it was all bumped to Monday, January 2nd. It's, some sort of unwritten rule that they have here that the Tournament of Roses Association and Los Angeles area in general, that if New Year's happens, if the 1st is on a Sunday, then everything gets bumped over to the 2nd on a Monday. So the 1st was very dead. It was cold, cloudy. It had been raining during New Year's Eve on the 31st. And when the 1st rolled around, it was just dead. Nothing was going on. And so my mom and I decided it's just sort of, exit the cabin fever. Oh, let's just go to the McDiner and everything. And we went down there. And as far as you mentioned the car, I have vintage cars from the 60s. And I like taking pictures of them in front of like cool locations that are sort of retro, that sort of reflect them. So I brought my convertible, my 67 Catalina convertible with me, and thought, I have a camera that I got as a gift that I just learned how to use, a nice digital camera. I'll take it with me, take it for a test spin, the camera and the car, and grabbed my mom and went down there and had a late lunch and took some pictures of the car in front of the diner. As a matter of fact, I even included those in my book just to be complete. And we sat down to eat, and then everything changed.
So, yeah, walk us through it.
So, basically, as we were eating, I noticed it was overcast and cold, and I saw four objects drop out of the sky. And if you look at the diner, it's like from the inside, it's like an aquarium, and it's just windows all the way around. Even from the outside, you can see it's just windows. You have a really good panorama of it, so of everything around you. So when I saw these things drop, at first I thought, it's probably just some, aircraft for the parade or for the Rose Bowl that's going to be happening or whatever. And I'm like, wait a minute, everything's dead. Nothing's going on right now. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the pictures that I have in the book, the pictures I took, you can see my car is like the only car there. The restaurant was just empty. We were the only ones there eating, and it's just us and the workers. So I told my mom, I go, I don't get it. I don't know what that is. I go, I'm going to go outside and take a look and see what that is. So I went outside in the northwest corner of the building, and I looked up, and I just saw four discs in a diamond formation. And then I saw the diamond formation break apart because one of the discs started dropping lower. And at first, I was just sort of, you have that whole thing of like where you don't believe what you're seeing, so you're sort of mesmerized. And so as I watched them, move across, and that one disc was struggling, then all of a sudden I realized, I got a camera with me. What am I doing, you know? So I'm like, okay, it's going to go into science mode. I don't know what I'm looking at. I can't believe that I'm seeing what I'm seeing, you know? And then you sort of go through this whole disbelief phase almost instantaneously. But I'm like, okay, but I got a camera. I'm going to shoot pictures. And so I took a picture. Then I'm like, and they were getting closer. And I thought, oh, I got video. I'm going to try and shoot video. So I flipped the camera to video mode and started shooting video. But the minute I put into video mode, at this point, the objects were at their closest. And that may be what was happening. I don't know what was influencing the camera. But the camera has focus lock squares. And like five focus lock squares appeared. And they just started dancing across the screen. So I couldn't even see what I was filming. Like, what is going on with this camera? So for just over 30 seconds, I let the video roll and I tried to zoom in, but I couldn't tell whether I was getting anything or not. So I'm like, okay, this is, you know, they're going to be gone. And I don't even know if this is actually even getting anything really. So I flipped back into camera mode and then I shot three more pictures. And then I thought, God, I got to get somebody out here to take a look. So I turned around for a second to see, you know, check on my mom and see if there's any, like an employee that maybe was wandering through because the door is glass. Then maybe I could pull somebody out to take a quick look. So I looked, and I didn't see anybody, so quickly looked back. They're gone. They're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, they must have moved really fast. But the thing about it is that as they had been moving, they had dropped out of the sky in a diamond formation. That formation had broken apart, and it's almost like I don't know, it's kind of like you think of when you see a herd of animals and there's a wounded one and the other ones are sort of corralling around it and you can tell which one is hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the impression that you got with this. And then they sort of regained their diamond formation, and that's the point where I turn around, and when I turn back around, they were gone. And I don't know whether they, you know, they were headed towards the mountains. And I don't know whether they made it to the mountains, whether the craft that was damaged there, you can see, I could see splotches on the bottom. And in the pictures, you can see that they had triangular panels underneath and that there's some sort of discoloration, in one area of the disc. And the only thing I could think of was that, since they came out of, you know, a heavy overcast, maybe it had been hit by lightning. You know, I don't know.
Mm. Wow. So how long would you say this sighting lasts in total?
Probably 2 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
I've got like 34 seconds of video, maybe, then the picture that I shot before the video, and then I stood there staring for, I don't know, what seemed like an eternity, but probably was maybe only 15, 20 seconds. And then the remaining three pictures, which are spaced about, I don't know, about maybe 10 seconds apart. The camera was really slow. I was unfamiliar with it. It, like I said, it was been a gift, so I really didn't, you know, I was fiddling with it, trying to do the best I could. And I lucked out because the one picture that I've identified as picture 1680, just by the frame count of the camera, that picture wound up actually, the focus was on, and it actually had obviously locked onto the damaged craft the best, and that was the one that came out really, really, really good. And as a matter of fact, the funny thing about it is that, you know, when I went back inside, because the craft were gone, and, you know, my mom and I looked at the camera, we looked at the footage, and I was like, well, you know, I don't know, you know. So it had this kind of reaction of, I don't know what I saw, you know. I mean, I didn't want to believe that I saw what I saw. So believe it or not, we sort of sat, we talked, we finished eating our dessert, and then we drove home, and then I whipped out my laptop, downloaded the images, and I thought, okay, let's see what I saw. And I clicked through the pictures, and when I got to that image, then I zoomed in, and then as I zoomed in, the detail just exploded out, like, whoa! So, I mean, it's like, I did see what I saw, you know? And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. You know, what am I going to do? You know, astronomers aren't supposed to see this kind of stuff, you know? What the heck have I done, you know? So it was kind of a strange reaction, you know, but that's what went through my mind.
So can you describe what was in those images? Or actually, first, were you, to the naked eye, could you actually see something shaped like craft?
Yes, yes. You could definitely make them out. You could definitely make out that they were craft. You could definitely make out that they were discs. This is what caught my eye. I mean, if I had gone outside and I could see that they were I don't know, drones or balloons or something like that. It's like, oh, okay, those are drones or balloons. I'm just, who cares? And go back inside and whatever. You know, I'm not going to waste my time, you know, taking pictures of anything else. You could tell that they were discs. You could tell the way they were moving. There's gusty winds. The winds were blowing perpendicular to travel of the craft. So I knew that they were completely unaffected by the wind at all. And you could hear that. As a matter of fact, in the video didn't turn out very well. They turned out to be just like gray splotches, unfortunately, that move across and they pulsate, which is, I think, an effect of the dancing focus frames that were, you know, that the camera had. And it may have been the craft that were somehow affecting the camera, because I've tested the camera since, I could never get it to replicate that effect. I, you know, shot against, you know, cloudy backgrounds of aircraft, of birds, of anything, whatever, and I could not get it to do and replicate, you know, what it did that day at all. But, yeah, they were silent. They moved, for lack of a better way of putting it, intelligently. You could tell that they were moving in a way like not randomly. Because, you know, when balloons travel, they sort of bounce around. They get tossed by the wind. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're tethered to each other, they'll pull and snap, you know, and all that. And there's none of that. And in the video, as poor as the video is, shows that they're clearly moving in a purposeful, you know, linear direction and everything, and that they're behaving intelligently. And I think that's what Space Command got out of it, because when Space Command got involved, they made a really big stink about wanting the video. But I think it's a question of context, because the video by itself wouldn't hold up, and the pictures by themselves would semi-hold up. But I think together, it's a game changer. And that's actually what the Space Command person was very adamant about. Astronomers don't see these kind of things, as this person said, and they certainly don't report them, and you're not going to report them, this person told me. And there rarely is footage of the same sighting of both pictures and video, and we want everything you've got. And mind you, I was on FaceTime, so I turned the phone around and walked them through my sighting on my laptop, so they saw everything right away. So they knew what they wanted.
So can you just pause here for a second and tell me who exactly were you speaking to, and how did the connection all come about?
Yeah, it was, you know, in hindsight, I know the UFO community is going, no, don't say unfortunate. It's fortunate, because, you know, this all sort of exploded out, and now we all know about it. But there's a part of me that says this is sort of an unfortunate series of events, because I sort of got dragged into all this whole world. This is not the path I chose. This is why I called the book Intersect, that, you know, this is sort of, it's not a crossroads where you have a choice of you go left or you go right, you know, and you have a fork in the road. This is where something intersects your life and you just get thrown into something and dragged in, kicking and screaming whether you want to or not. And it's just a matter of how you deal with it. And how I dealt with it for the first 2 years was basically just shut myself in and became withdrawn. Only now that I've sort of, and I'm an outgoing person, as you can tell, so only now I've sort of been more vocal about everything, because I'm just tired of being beat up by everything that's been going on with this whole thing with the military and everything. And how it happened, the events have sort of dragged me into it. It happened very innocently. I went to dinner with a friend, and I had a print of that one close-up shot of the one disc, and the friend was also somebody who had a background in geology like me, so they're a science person. So I just trusted their judgment implicitly, and I explained what happened to me, and then slid the print across the table and said, check it out. And this person was like, wow, that's amazing. And that looked like that's pretty much as far as it went. But instead, this person reached out to their family. So I'm being non-gender specific, non-anything specific, because I really need to protect a lot of people's privacy here, because some of these people are involved in military and involved in a lot of things. So it's really this, so bear with me as I try to sort of explain this. So this person contacted their sibling, and this sibling, unbeknownst to me, is married to somebody in Space Command. How's that for a grapevine, you know, of seven, you know, degrees of separation? And so this friend then invited me, I have some problems with my computer, you know, and you've done some tech stuff for me. Would you mind taking a look at my computer and see if you could help me out? So sure. So I came over. This was like maybe a week later or so, and looked at this person's computer. And then the person's like, oh, you know, by the way, my siblings on the line here on FaceTime, I was talking with them. Why don't you talk with this person for a minute while I go to the neighbor's house? I'm like, oh, where are you going? I don't know this sibling. Wait, what are you doing? And they put me on, and the sibling is like, hey, Marian, nice to meet you. I'm like, oh, well, nice to meet you too, blah, blah, blah. And then the sibling sort of cut the conversation, said, I want you to meet somebody. I want you to meet my spouse. And then the spouse went into the frame and said, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I work for Space Command, and I'm ranking such and such rank. And I was like, whoa, okay. And so the person was a, let's just say, fairly high-ranking person. And so you heard, I heard that you saw something. Why don't you tell me about it? I'm like, you did, huh? So I told the person what, you know, explained what I saw, and they said, so you have your laptop with you? I'm like, yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, but why don't you bring up your footage and let me see it. Turn the phone around. So I turned the phone around, and then they said, that one picture you said was really shows the details of the disc. Could you bring that up and zoom it in? And so I zoomed it in, and this person's response for, yep, and I quote, yep, these suckers are real, all right. We need everything you've got, end quote. This is exactly what this person said. So I was like, okay. I'm like, what do you mean you want everything? We want everything, and you're not going to talk about it. And so then the sibling got into the thing like, no, go to the news, go to the press. And then the Space Command person pushed the sibling out of the way and said, their spouse, which is their spouse, and said, no, you're not going to do any such thing. You're not going to talk about this. You're not going to do anything with it. You're not going to share it. You're not going to whatever. As far as you're concerned, this never happened. But we need copies of everything you've got, and we need them now, you know, and blah, blah, blah. So the conversation continued a little bit, and this person was very adamant. And I'm like, so I'm also, and I tried to say, so they're real. I like, they're like, it's not a question of whether, you know, you're going to give us access. You're just going to give it to us, period. And so what happened was I did hand over the pictures. I sent them the pictures, but I stalled on handing over the video because I just felt like it's the last leverage I had, and I didn't understand what was going on and why this is just spiraling out of control. And you have to understand, this is not my world. And my brother is all into UFOs and all of this stuff and everything. I was not. You know, when I put down my copy of Chariots of the Gods when I was a kid, that's sort of where my interest in UFOs had ended, you know, way, way back when. So this was just sort of a whole spiraling out of control situation. And so I clung to that footage, and I didn't want to turn it over at first. So I just made up all sorts of excuses just to not turn it over to them. But they were really adamant, and they pushed through family connections and friend connections of people that I know that they absolutely have to have that footage. They have to have the video. So have you had a chance to see the video?
No, I was told that I couldn't find it. I actually looked for it. So is that on YouTube?
It's on Rudnick.com on my website, which is also on YouTube.
Okay.
It's part of it. Just I call it Intersect the Movie, and Intersect the Movie goes through my sighting, and the video is there. And the video is there twice, actually. I show it, and then I discuss it, and then I show it again. And one of the things people should realize when they watch it, there's all sorts of conversions that happen when you are on YouTube. And so when you watch it, you can notice that the objects look different the first time around you see them than the second time around. And that's simply a product of the conversion that it goes through on YouTube. So there's nothing I can do. The original file is well over 100 megabytes, and it's an AVI file. And I have yet to find a home for it in its native format so that it could be seen the way it's meant to be seen. But be that as it may, the UFOs are still only fuzzy dots, fuzzy gray dots. They were really adamant about wanting it. So when I finally handed over the videos, that's when all hell broke loose. And that's where my life just sort of got turned upside down very, very, very quickly, because I turned over I emailed a copy of the video. I had to use all, it's such a big file. It was such a problem to get it to them and everything, but I did. And when I finally did, that night, the next morning, my friend, called me in a panic from work. And I talked to my sibling, you know, this is really important. You got to listen to me carefully. I'm like, why, what's going on? They're like, you sent the video over and everything, and now everything has changed. I'm like, what do you mean? What's changed? Like, F-18s are heading your way. I'm like, what are F-18s? What are 1/8s? What are you talking about? What are 1/8s? And this person's like, I don't know. My friend's like, I don't know what they are, but F-18s are heading your way, and you better be ready for them. And evidently what happened was, my friend's sibling had overheard their spouse on the phone, you know, doing Space Command business, and had leaked the aircraft were on their way. And actually, there were two squadrons of F-18s that found their way here. I turned over the footage on one night, and the aircraft were here the next. Bam.
All right. We have to go into a break in just a minute here. But just a couple of things. First of all, astronomers do see UFOs. There's a lot of sightings that have happened. My friend Alejandro Rojas wrote an article on that. But why such a fuss? A lot of people see UFOs. Why such a fuss? And why would they send F-18 Hornets?
Super Hornets.
But I think we're going to have to go into the break. So I'm going to come back, and we're going to be talking about that in particular. All right? So hang in, everyone. We'll be right back right after these messages. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Marian Rudnick. And just before the break, we were talking about F-18s being sent over. I guess, you know, the question is, why would they make such a big deal about it? And why would they send how long after the event did they send them over? And why would they send them over after? I guess that's what I have to ask you for a question.
Right. So before we address that, I'd like to sort of just flip back real quickly to a comment you made, and I think it's important because you'd said, well, you had quoted me as saying, well, astronomers don't see UFOs, but they do. But I actually never said astronomers don't see UFOs. The quote that I use, like, you know, on my website or just in general with my book is that an astronomer has no business believing in UFOs, but sometimes he has no choice. Uh-huh. That actually implies that there are astronomers that see them, but they're being silenced. That's what I'm saying. But sometimes somebody has no choice but finally to talk about it because they've been forced into a corner, and that's me. You know, so I was aware, the only astronomer I was aware of that had had a sighting was Clyde Tombaugh. I had heard that he had been in the, I guess, Arizona or New Mexico desert during a barbecue and had seen some things. But I had never really heard of any contemporary astronomers seeing anything, and certainly I had never heard of another astronomer having footage. And the quote itself kind of is a paraphrasing of what the Space Command person said, because that person was really adamant. They said literally, an astronomer has no business seeing this, and an astronomer has no business talking about this, and you are not going to talk about this. Do you understand? I'm like, oh, I understand, but I'm not agreeing to anything. And that person was furious. But that's where that quote comes from. So if that makes sense, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. I'm still not understanding why this person from Space Command would be making such a big deal about it, because there's sightings, you know, I don't know how many thousands of sightings per year that people see. Why do you suppose this person was making a big deal about it?
Well, I had wrestled with the whole thing for a month before this all, because by the time the aircraft were here, it was actually a month after the sighting. It was the beginning of February. And so, is it one of ours? Because I've, Marion, you just saw experimental aircraft of some kind or military. Edwards Air Force Base is close by, and noticed that they were heading towards the north, towards the mountains, and Edwards Air Force Base is on the other side. So that's all they were. They were just test craft that were heading that way, and that's all you saw, you know, blah, 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 blah. That all went out the window really, really quickly because of their response. And it was sort of illuminated to me by a friend that I have that works in the DOD world, who made a number of comments and observations, and who I can't really divulge, and I mention this person in my book. But the thing that becomes clear is kind of like this. Why would the airplanes show up a month later? So why would they? Well, why would they even show up at all, actually? Like you said, that's a good question. It's because, first of all, they were waiting for the footage, the video. They needed all the data. For whatever reason, they wanted to be able to corroborate to match the pictures against the video and make sure that everything lines up what they know. And once they know, like you said, lots of people see UFOs. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm not the only astronomer and everything that's taken pictures. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe there have been others and they've been silenced. You know, we don't know. But I do know this. The game changer was that my friend made a big deal about is that, think about it, they said. If it was ours, there's no reason for a military response. They would have known about the fact that one of their own craft went down, and that it had been, I gave them the data at the beginning of February, but the craft had, were seen on January 1st, a month before. They knew it went that maybe a craft had gone down or a craft were flying in the area. This would not have been news to them. They would not have responded. They wouldn't have been surprised when I was talking with them on the phone, and they certainly wouldn't have dispatched two squadrons of F-18s here to the location. So why would they? Because it's a crash event, and it's not ours.
So you think that
that's the simple answer.
I see. So you think what they – their involvement had to do with, they think there was, because of the way this craft was reacting, the possible damaged craft, that it possibly
my discussion
crashed.
My discussions with them during that phone call all focused on that fourth craft.
I see.
That's what they were just adding, you know, everything you can tell us about how it moved with this, what it does, what you saw. I'm like, I don't know. There were spots. Maybe there were burn marks. Maybe it was lightning that hit it. I don't know. I go, but I know that it was just acting like a wounded animal in a herd, you know, and the others seemed to be trying to protect it. And they're like, well, where did it went? Did you see it go down in the mountains? I'm all, I don't know. I go, I turned around for a second and they were just gone. They're like, were you sure? You know, do you know whether they went? You know, I'm like, I can't answer your question. I go, I just know that they disappeared. And I know the general area that they were heading in towards the San Gabriel Mountains right above my house. And so then, like, we want all your footage. We want everything you've got. Well, they got everything I had and they showed up the next day. Why? Because A, it's not one of our craft. Otherwise, there's no reason to come here. They would have recovered one of our craft if it was one of ours a month ago when the crash happened. And second of all, it obviously must have been a downed craft or they wouldn't have been bothered. And these F-18s were here for a week. And I think all the videos, there were a ton of videos about this when the aircraft were here that people had posted. All that stuff's gone, and so is the CBS News report. But on the CBS website, if you dig, I think the news report is still there. And you can actually see them on the ground at night, the reporters talking, and they zoom in on the aircraft, and you can see that two of the pilots are even identified in the footage as code name or their names, their Air Force names, Murder Face and Half Man.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, that strikes me as already really, really interesting pilots to have here, you know, and you can plainly see the names in the CBS News report. But anyways, you've got two squadrons, and then they're overflying this area over Monrovia, over my house, and over these hills every hour on the hour in pairs, the F-18s, for a week, just blazing over there again and again and again. And when I did reach out to my DOD work-related friend about this, they said, but are there other aircraft in the area? I'm like, I don't know. This is, you know, because I didn't contact them till maybe a day or two after this, the week of insanity ended. And this person said, well, you heard other aircraft. I'm like, yeah, there were other aircraft. Well, the other aircraft were the recon aircraft. They were actually probably looking for what the downed craft, where it was. And the jets were part of that. The F-18s were part of that because they're equipped to do that kind of work as well. But they're also a distraction. They're the big, shiny, noisy thing that you look at, while the other more serious aircraft are doing even more serious work. Not that the F-18s aren't doing serious work, but they're sort of working in concert together.
I would think that if I were to send out a search party, so to speak, that helicopters would be the way to go. Did you see helicopters as well?
No, I saw what looked like an E-11A Bacon for, I don't know how you pronounce it, or BACN. It's some sort of, it's like a battlefield coordination network center aircraft that will coordinate assets, multiple assets in the ground, air, and everywhere else. And there could have been helicopters, but they could have been really, really high. Again, there could have been helicopters behind the hills, and I wouldn't have known it because the jets were so loud. So I won't say that the helicopters weren't here, but I can say this, that once the jets left, the helicopters took over. This has been like a helicopter air show ever since. And it started slow. 2017, you just see spots of you know, helicopters that would arrive. And to be honest, I kind of didn't pay attention to them at first. Just like most people, you know, you look up, oh, there's an helicopter. That's cool. And you just sort of walk it off and you move on with your life. But where I live, nestled to the hills, which is where the craft must have gone down, somewhere on the other side, the helicopters became more and more frequent, really frequent, until it became an air show, literally. We're talking AH-1 Vipers, UH-1 Venoms, Blackhawks, Apaches, Kiowas. There are constantly R-44 Ravens, remotely piloted ones that go, to this day, go back and forth and traverse along the hills, and then they disappear. Then after a while, you don't see anything. And then they're back. You've got V-22 Ospreys that make regular appearances, Chinooks, Lakotas, and unmarked gray helicopters that I have. This is going to be the focus of my second book. There's just so much stuff that happened, especially near the end of 2018 and then through 2019 this year, that it became just so overwhelming that I was forced literally to split what my original book was in half. Which is why when you read the book, there's sort of a cliffhanger ending where I show some pictures, and I'm not trying to be mean and do teasers. It's just that it would have been a 600-page book otherwise. So I just had to be realistic and break it apart and then just sort of digest what's been happening here because it's been so overwhelming. But it goes through phases. You go here, and like right now, and it's quiet, and it doesn't seem like there's anything going on. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose, and it's just insanity. You know, and helicopters show up in mass, and then a military one will show up, and then you see, you know, an intelligence aircraft way high overhead, you know, or jets that you can't hear. And it'll be like several hours or a day of that kind of activity, and all of a sudden, nothing again.
So you said this, you live near Edwards Air Force. Is it near there? Is that what you said?
No, Edwards Air Force Base is on the other side of the San Gabriel Mountains here.
Uh-huh.
So to the north. So, but that's, it's like a couple hours drive from here. It's not like it's close by.
What about other military?
But I am against the mountains.
Is there other military bases there?
They're south, also a couple of hours. Like in the San Diego area and that area, there's no military base per se, like right here. I know that supposedly there is a quote unquote secret hidden military army base in the hills above Glendora and Azusa, which is to the east of me. And that's actually not far from where my brother's house is. And he sees helicopters come in and out of there all the time also, though I'm sure they would deny it. But I think it's common knowledge in this area that they're there. And there's military vehicles that drive around here all of a sudden you'll just see them appear, Humvees and this and that, you know, that all of a sudden you say, wow, I'm looking at a fully armed Humvee driving down the street, and then it's just gone. you know, and it goes into, there's access roads into these hills, and they disappear up that way. And I know that in social media, some people are like, oh my, I've gotten outreach in all sorts of ways from people about this. And, you know, and actually, I want to take a second, you know, speaking of social media, and if I may sort of digress for a second, I just want to, for everybody that's out there that's you know, been on my Facebook and Twitter pages, and so many of you have actually sent me private messages, you know, direct messages, things like that. I just want to really take a second to just thank you for your support and your kindness and your care and your understanding and your concern for my well-being and everything. It has been a very, very rough road, and it actually means a lot to me, and your suggestions and your concern is really, really greatly appreciated. But so anyways, back to what you're asking about. You would think that I could get into the hills and take a closer look at what's going on. I can't. Ever since the sighting, the cities around here have very, very quietly restricted access to any of the roads. All of a sudden, their signs have gone up, you know, federal property or state property, no access allowed and everything. You know, you will be jailed and fined and blah, 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 blah. And areas where you could used to be able to hike. So I thought, wow, I could just hike into these areas and take a look for myself what's going on back here. Can't get in there at all. It's like it's a ring of security that sort of appeared, you know, slowly but surely, and sort of crept around these areas on all these foothills.
Well, all right. If you were a skeptic, what would you be saying to you right now? would you be saying, well, maybe there's some type of military exercises going on government land, or, you know what I mean? What would you think the other reasons could be besides?
I would have a really hard time dismissing someone like me is saying, because the amount of military activity, like show me another place in a country where there isn't a military base next door, and you've got Vipers and Venoms and Blackhawks and Apaches and Kiowas and Ravens and Ospreys and Lakotas and Chinooks and rare drones, military drones, and then we got compass calls, which are battlefield airplanes which coordinate assets, Hawkeyes, intelligent planes. Normally one Hawkeye will appear. I have pictures of three of them appearing together. What are they looking for? And then F-18s. And then you've got this F-16 fighter that went down not long ago, maybe a month or so ago, which the press just sort of was like a blurb overnight, and then everybody just sort of ignored it. Think about it. A fully armed F-16 fighter was flying along the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains, went down into an auto parts warehouse in Riverside, fully armed and fairly intact. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, and the pilot was able to eject. The military puts a ring of security around it, recovers the aircraft, says it's fully armed, and one spokesman from the military, they have no comment about why a fully armed F-16 is doing overflights over these areas, except for one spokesman who misspeaks and says it was on a armed space defense mission. Hmm. What is an armed space defense mission over foothills nestled along residential areas of Southern California? So I would ask that of a skeptic. And I would also ask the fact that a lot of the footage, that things that I'm going to be, you know, in the second book that I'm going to be putting out, and the book is sort of chronological, which is why I focused on 2017 in the first book, and the second book will be 2018 and 2019 up to the present. And one of the things I found is that you see these helicopters and they're flying, and sometimes they're just so erratic, and the aircraft, and what is going on? So I'd take footage, take pictures, and I also do video. And the videos was what would be extremely telling, because all of a sudden in the video you would see that there's an orb in the area. And I found that I had to, you know, you get sort of that, like what I described earlier in this in our talk, the shiny object syndrome, where you're, wow, look at this. There's an Osprey, you know, wow. And you're looking at the Osprey, but you're not looking at what the Osprey is doing. Or you're not looking at what the Apache or the Black Hawk helicopter is doing. And what it's doing is it's circling an area in a canyon here behind the mountains, for example, in many instances, again and again and again. It's like, what is it circling? Well, one of the videos I shot that was kind of eye-opening, and this is in the at the end of my book. I posted it's in there, and I think I posted the picture also on my website. Is I was busy filming the helicopters going in circles, and I reviewed the footage. Like, oh my God. There's what they're circling. They're circling an orb that's just hanging over the neighborhood, that's nestled next to the hills, and it's just hanging there. The helicopters are going around and around. They're trying to chase it away. It's almost like the military is pushing back at whatever is here, and I don't know why what's here is here.
Wow, interesting. Off the coast of you, I'm just trying to think of, you know, there appears to be a lot of sightings off the coast of Southern California. How far away is your location? I know you said, you know, you're near Pasadena, which is inland a bit, but is that like 50 miles to the ocean, or is it further than that?
No. In California, we measure everything by drive time. I have no idea how many miles it is, but I can tell you that it's probably about I could probably reach the nearest beach on a clear driving day, maybe in 30, 40 minutes. So it's fairly close. Beaches are close. If you're in the hills here, in the foothills, if you go up high enough, you can see the edge of the ocean. And you can actually, in Monrovia, if you're in the right place on the right street, you can see Catalina Island in the distance.
I see. Wow. Because there is a lot of sightings way. There's a lot of sightings out in the Catalina way.
One of the things that's now become sort of a repository of information, and I don't know what to even do with it. You know, people are so kind, and they're... And they are desperate for being heard, but they are terrified of the response that they'll get, with being mocked, having their, you know, their livelihood, you know, threatened, and people just, you know, tearing them apart. Ha ha! You think you saw something? Blah blah blah. But I have streams in my Facebook and Twitter of people that are literally telling me about things they see. And one of the things that I'm seeing is a pattern of military aircraft. All along these foothills. One person even outed the location of a hidden military airstrip on the other side of these mountains and everything, and gave me the specific location of the towns and where it is. And there's literally in the middle of the desert, there's chain link fence and five unmarked gray ospreys. Just one of them is in my book, as a matter of fact, and I posted a picture of it in my Rudnick.com website. So you can see it there also. If you don't have the book, you can go to the website, and I think it's there. If it's not there, I will put it up there. But it's a gray osprey that was unmarked, that was circling this house. And this person DM'd me on Twitter and said, there's this airstrip that's been put together and everything on the other side of the mountains where you are, and these five ospreys are here, and there's a ton of, like, black unmarked helicopters here, and they're all flying towards your area from this location. And I'm like, oh my God. And another person who lives in El Monte, next to the El Monte airport, who read the book, all of a sudden reached out to me and is terrified to talk publicly, and said that she has seen black helicopters come out from that airport towards where I live, and then disappear in the hillside behind. So you can see them drop behind the hillside behind where you live. I'm like, I know. I have footage. I have footage, Martin, of helicopters literally hanging in the air. You tell this to the debunkers, and they're literally slowly descending vertically down behind these hills. Now you tell me what's behind these hills that's so valuable that military and unmarked helicopters are going back there and everything and landing. Now they know I'm here now, and in a lot of cases they've actually now attacked me, which is illegal. And I have footage of it where the helicopters swoop in and come in at me, and I can see the pilots' faces, and they think they're going to freak me out. And inside, yeah, I'm freaking out. You know, I've got a multi-ton, million-dollar helicopter barreling down on me, either an unmarked helicopter of some kind or, in one case, a Black Hawk circling and doing, like mock dives at me. But they're getting pissed because I motion towards my eyes and then point at them like, I see you, and I'm holding a camera and I'm standing in my front yard and I'm not backing off. And they're pissed. I mean, pissed. And I reached out to my DOD contact, and this person was just, all they would say is like, they were very, very adamant, I cannot address this directly to you, but I'm telling you, you have made this whole issue extremely personal to a lot of people and everything that are involved in all of this. And you better be careful about what line you cross. And this is where the bibs came in.
The bibs, okay, like Men in Black type.
Yeah, I just call them MIBs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
MIBs. So I understand your story, and I'm listening to you, but I just don't get why they'd be after you. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that have seen a lot of crazy things. No one's ever, like, actually coming at you with a helicopter. I mean, that's...
I don't know. To be honest with you, really, the honest answer is, I really don't know. I have ideas or suppositions, or, you know, that maybe because I'm not backing down, maybe because I'm not cowering in fear, or maybe because I'm like, you know, oh my God, I'm so freaked out, I can't handle this anymore, and I'm curling up into a ball into a corner, you know. I did that for a while, you know, at the beginning and everything, not quite to that extent, but where I just sort of withdrew. And matter of fact, people at the gym that I go to locally here were commenting, as a matter of fact, recently about how, you know, wow, we didn't know you were actually an extrovert, because we've only been coming here for a year or so, and we've just known you as this withdrawn, quiet person who it just sort of keeps to themselves. I'm like, yeah, well, that's because I was trying to process everything that's happening to me. And I don't know. I don't understand why you'd bother following me with a helicopter. I don't know why they would take dives at me. I don't know why I'm at the gym and I see a Black Hawk helicopter come racing across the mountains, come down, descend over a shopping center, and then hover over my 67 convertible, you know, while everybody's walking around just ignoring it. It just blows me away. The public is just ignores these things happening and then goes tearing off when I go running after it. That's the thing that about this is that I just go running after these things. I stand up to them. But why? And I asked my DOD contact and everything about this, and they just said, well, you realize this costs a lot of money. I'm like, this is not my problem. I'm not asking them to follow me. I'm not asking them to harass me. I don't understand why all of this is going on. And the only thing that makes sense to me that I can come up with, unless somebody can give me a better answer, is that I have, when you mentioned triangles, I've now acquired over the last year just sightings of a number of craft here. Triangles, weird tetrahedral craft. So it's like a tetrahedron, a three-sided pyramid, and orbs and disks and things like that. And so I'm seeing all of this, and I'm seeing them. In some cases, there's a picture that's up also that's where there's two Blackhawks and there's a dark orb following them. Or I have in the book, there's three Hawkeyes that I photographed, and there's two discs following them. They dropped out of the sky, followed the three Hawkeyes for maybe just a fraction of a second, then bang, they just burst back into the clouds and they're gone. Fortunately, I saw them appear in the clouds, so I just focused on the planes. I'm like, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. You know, I've done this enough times and everywhere. I've taken pictures or video where things wind up behind aircraft, and the aircraft just aren't aware that they're being followed. And sure enough, the minute they appeared, I just clicked, and I got the money shot. But, you know, so sometimes I'm very lucky, and sometimes I just am able to just sort of be very, very, you know, persistent and get the shot that I need. But the short answer is I think I live in the wrong place for them. I live where they're dealing with some sort of issue here. Maybe this is some sort of beachhead where I know supposedly, I guess, that Elizondo is dealing with stuff like, and you were mentioning Catalina Island and Tic Tacs and all this kind of stuff. And I have seen a couple of Tic Tac type craft here. So they've come inland. And maybe that's what the military activity is all about, is about the fact that there's an increased activity of UFOs. But the general public here isn't paying attention, and the military doesn't need a whistleblower or somebody going, hey, look, you know, come here and look. And to anybody who's listening to me and everything, you know, I'm not a hog at all. Come here and look. Come. And actually, there have been people who have reached out to me, and I've told them where to go. Come here, film. Film the helicopters. Film the aircraft and everything. You're ultimately going to wind up getting a picture of a UFO at some point, or a video of a UFO, and you're also going to get a bunch of really, really cool military hardware that our taxpayers, you know, our tax dollars paid for, you know, and that's acting on our behalf mysteriously without explanation. And we are owed an explanation for what they're doing here. Because you wouldn't have this, no area has a 24-hour air show like this, you know. So, yeah, come here. Come and see. Come to Southern California. Come to Catalina Island. Come to Monrovia and Pasadena. Actually, all these foothill communities, they're all rife with this kind of activity. Something's happening, and the UFO community just needs to wake up. They're, you know, they're focused on all the TTSA stuff, which is great, and the Nimitz stuff, which is great. But they should realize that one of the squadrons of aircraft that appeared here on January, you know, in February and everything, because of my January 1st, 2017 sighting, one of those squadrons probably came from the Nimitz. So this aircraft carrier is central to what's going on. And I don't know. I don't understand. I'm not a ufologist per se. I'm just a guy who happens to have a science background and happens to live in, I guess, what a ufologist would say is the right place at the right time. But for me, is the wrong place, the wrong time, and has been the bane of my existence now. But I'm tired of being squashed. I'm tired of having my income tampered with, my electronics tampered with being followed and everything, and harassed, and aircraft buzzing my house in the middle of all hours of the night. You know, I had one time where there were helicopters here for 3 hours, just taking turns hanging over the house and playing cat and mouse with me. And I videoed it. And at one point, I go over this in my second book, and so I urge people to pick up a copy when it comes out so you know what's going on. I actually, you hear me in the video going, you know, I say something to the effect, I wonder if he sees me. The helicopter nods. Think of the audacity of the pilot to do that. You know, does a little nod like, yeah, I see you, and which means he also hears me. So why? You tell me. You know, I'm tired of being singled out like this. But maybe if enough people come out here and push back and start seeing what I'm seeing, then maybe there'll be some answers to all these questions. Because I don't think I'm that special. I'm special only because it's a science person who happens to be living in the right, like I said, the wrong place and at the wrong time, or right place, right time, from a ufologist's point of view. That makes sense?
I don't know if it makes sense, but I hear you. Yeah. So the lines are open if anyone wants to call in, and that number is 85-KGRA Live. That phone number, you can write it down, is 855-472-5483. So the lines are open if anyone wants to give us a call, and we do have a call screener waiting there for you, and would love to get some feedback about this story. I've listened to a lot of people tell a lot of different stories. This one, I have to say, this one's a tough one for me. And you know, I'm not calling you a liar. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm just telling you, the story is just fantastical, and it's really hard to swallow.
The pictures and the videos, yeah, to wrap your mind around it. I have trouble wrapping my mind around it. I look at all the footage that I have, the pictures and the videos, and it's mind-numbing. So my answer to you is that Elizondo or some of these other people, if you're listening to me, I'm not interested in necessarily being on the air and, you know, and blah, 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 and your shows and all that. Come here. I'll show you my footage. You need to look at this, and you need to respond to it.
Uh-huh. And is your footage, you mentioned you have a number of things up online, so do you have, like right now, the listener can jump over and actually see some of these videos, and where would they find them, or pictures?
The pictures are in the book, and the pictures are also on Rudnick.com. Some of them are on that video, which is just on YouTube, Intersect, the movie. But if you go to just Rudnick.com, it's all there, sort of right there. And I will be adding stuff also there I've never built a website before, so people have to bear with me. This is not, you know, a social media and website savvy type of person. This is not what I do, so I'm out of my element, and I'm trying to move as fast as I can while at the same time trying to finish the second book for everybody so that everybody can read it. And to be honest, I have no idea, you know, what's going to happen after the second book and everything. I've sort of reached a crossroads and everything. I wouldn't say an intersect, but a crossroads, because a couple weeks ago there was an event here, which I spoke about at another interview, where there were helicopters that were circling in the just a little pocket of a valley here above my house. And I went outside. It was just past midnight, and there was obviously something that was there that was hovering. And one helicopter was there, and then a military helicopter showed up, and then a third helicopter joined. And I'm trying to desperately. It's night. Night footage is really hard to shoot. You know, I'm not a videographer, so I just do the best I can with a handheld digital camera, and I'm trying to document this. And this went on. People's lights were coming on all over the neighborhood. People were looking out their windows, what's going on. Most people just basically looked out, oh, helicopters, and then they simply went back to sleep. And I sort of stood my ground and was trying to film and try to get a shot of what it is that they're reacting to and circling, you know, on and on, and a military helicopter, trying to get a look at it, you know, so I could identify it, because everything, it's dark. The military helicopter was in with lights off. Now, how's that for, you know, and I could only catch glimpses of it with binoculars. So I had binoculars and a camera, and I'd walked up. I actually left my house and walked up about a block and a half from my house up into the hillside as much as I could to get a view of what was going on. And I had been warned by my DOD contact, by other people sort of in the know, that, you know, this whole thing with MIBs that I've gone through, that have shown up, that have pushed on me, that I elaborate in the book, and there are other things that have happened since, that be careful, because they, you know, there's a line that you'll cross, and they, you know, these are not nice people. And they're not. They're, as far as I'm concerned, that's why I call them MIB goons in my book. But a line was crossed that night just a couple weeks ago, because when I was trying to get this footage, a white van pulled up the street, and it parked on the side with lights on. And it's unmarked, no license plate, no nothing. And I'm like, okay, my radar went up, like something is going on. I've seen this before here, and everything with unmarked cars drive by. And if you look at my book also, there's a picture of where this Air Force MIB and everything parked in front of our house with this massive telephoto lens and looking deep into our house. And I have pictures of this person's face. Okay, so I didn't post the face because I realized it's national security, but all I can say is, don't push me, these people and everything, or I will out the face.
No,
but,
I would say
anyway,
I would
they
say,
crossed the line.
I would say screw that. I'd post anything. If I were you, I wouldn't worry a thing about national security. We have a caller.
Well, I would worry. Just to finish my story, and I'll be happy to take the caller. That line was crossed because that white van then moved, cut the street off and everything in half, and two guys got out, folded their hands, and stared me down. And when I tried to point my camera at them, they started walking towards me, and they opened the side door of the van, which is basically, we're taking you if you point that camera at us. And I had to back off, and I had to leave the area. Now, that's crossing a whole... I don't plan to disappear in the middle of the night, and this is just a whole new ball game now for me.
All right.
So anyway, so now the caller.
Yeah, we have John from Illinois. John, you're on the air.
Hi,
welcome
John.
To the show.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, John. You got a question for our guest?
Hi, John from Illinois.
Hi. You know, I live not too far from O'Hare Airport and not too far from a small private airport as well. And I got planes over my house all the time. And I got to tell you, sometimes it does kind of look like they're flying over my house a little bit more than they really should. But I've never thought that they were, like, actively trying to do anything to me. Are you sure that maybe it's not just a coincidence?
Yeah, because I don't live next to an airport. So it's not a coincidence. Think about it. It's not in an airport, but, you live next to an airport, but do you see Vipers, Venoms, Blackhawks, Apaches, Kiowas, Ravens, Ospreys, Chinooks, Compass Calls, Hawkeyes flying over your, house, you know, all the time? I certainly don't know of anybody that does.
I,
and
I would if I lived in Southern California by some of the biggest naval bases in the country.
Yeah, there are. I don't live next to a naval base. So I live in the nestled against the foothills and everything, sort of in the middle of, there's wilderness on one side and cities on the other. So there is no air base or naval base next to me at all.
Okay,
and these aircraft are—they're dropping behind the hill. There is no air base behind the hill. Yet I have video footage and pictures of these aircraft dropping behind the hill and landing in the hillside behind. So there's no reasonable explanation for that. That's just mind blowing. And I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. So that's my whole question. Is I want the community to respond and to dig into this.
Okay, is that public property or is that private property? Where are they landing?
They're landing in the hillsides that are federally and state-controlled lands. Before they were open to hiking, now they've all been closed off, which is also weird.
I can see why that might trouble you. Yeah, I can see
why
that
very much so.
What about these?
Yeah, you know, our taxpayer dollars pay for the military aircraft, and a lot of people here are scared when they look up. They've told me, oh, I see the Osprey, and it scares me. I go, why does it scare you? We paid for that. It's supposed to defend us. We should know what it's doing. It's not a bad question to ask, you know?
Okay, what about the cars in front of your house? Couldn't you call the police and have the police talk to them and get an idea of who they are?
Yeah, that's great, because you know what? The cops are part of that whole thing. I have pictures and everything of cops. The cops are following me. If you've seen my Twitter and everything, I just had a run-in recently where they waited till I was leaving my house, and then they went to my house, but I doubled back, and I caught them in front of my house, and then they took off. So they're part of this surveillance, and I've reached out again to contacts that I have in the security or dark world, if you want to call it that. And the cops are, I was told that probably the cops don't know what they're doing. I don't mean that in a facetious way. They don't know what they're doing in the sense that they've simply been told that there's a national security issue at stake and that they're supposed to do certain things and then report certain things, and that's all they probably know. However, one thing that has come up that's new that I will be adding in my book that wasn't in my book that just came to light a matter of only less than a month ago is that there are cops here that, and this is a new term for the UFO community, so you heard it here first, pacifiers. And pacifiers are cops that have been read in that know national security issues and know about UFOs, and they show up to make sure to squelch any filming and deter anybody from asking questions and get people to move along that there's nothing to see. Even if something is hanging right up in front of you, they make sure you simply leave, and they're called pacifiers. And that's some sort of national security term that's used, you know, among the security types. I'd never heard that term, but now, you know, I'm making it public and everything, and everybody should know, and you should be wary of these people.
Marian, I have to say this to you. You're not going to like me for saying this, but I have to tell you that I'm just not buying this. I'm not buying your story. I've never done this to a guest before, but I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. And I really apologize. I'm not going to say anything negative about you, but I'm just not buying this story.
Even though I have footage and video and pictures of all these aircraft.
I think you may have something with that, but I think you are well over-glorifying the whole thing. I don't buy the fact
that I'm not over-glorifying somebody parked in front of my house with a telephoto lens looking
that.
Into my house.
I don't think that. I just don't. I don't see that. But anyway, I thank you for being on our show. I really do. But that's it for me. I'm sorry to do this to you, but that's it. Okay?
Well, thank you for having me on, and I appreciate the time that you've given me.
Yes. All right. You take care. All right.
You too. Bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. Well, that's actually a first for me, and I'm sorry. I just felt like I had to do that. And if anyone wants to call in, you are welcome to call in. Other than that, I'm going to stop the show right now. But the phone number is 855-472-5483. Anyone wants to call in and just say hi, we have 20 minutes left or thereabouts. If anyone wants to call in and talk about a UFO sighting, again, I'm not going to bash our guest, but I just felt like I had to do that. And so anyone wants to call in, otherwise I'm going to call it a night. And next week is going to be a little tricky for all the regular listeners, because next week I'm going to be at the UFO Congress. I'm actually going to be in the air when this show is supposed to be on the air. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a show probably either Wednesday or Thursday evening. For those of you on YouTube, just keep your eye on the channel. You can, if you're not subscribed to my channel, you can also get notifications by clicking the little bell thing next to subscribe. So you can subscribe and get notices that way. Anyone can get a notice of when a show is going to be done because I do have a mailing list that's on my website. All you have to do is pop your email into that and you'll get weekly notices of who's going to be on the show. So I actually have a caller on the line, and I will take that call as soon as he is screened. And so next week, again, I'll be at the UFO Congress, and I have a very popular roundtable usually going on. I will tell you that also, if you do subscribe to the show, I'm probably going to have a couple of bonus shows that I'm going to give to subscribers. So that I'll do interviews. Hopefully I'll get a nice interview with George Knapp. For now, I have, looks like Dave Altman, friend of the show. Dave, how are you?
Hey, Martin, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Thanks for calling in.
I got on and I was moderating, and I forgot that I had a conference call scheduled with Kevin Day and Gary Voorhees. So I left the show on, I turned the volume down, and the three of us talked for about, 45 minutes. I hang up, and then I go back in the chat, and I turn the volume up, and all I hear is, "I'm sorry, sir, but this is the first time I'm going to have to, let somebody off the show." And I'm reading everybody in the chat, and they're like saying these things. Unbelievable. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch the whole thing.
I could be wrong. I should be more open-minded, but I just thought it was just too far over the top. Maybe I'm totally wrong. I don't know. But I just felt like I owed it.
If anybody would be able to, and I know you, so I know how you interview, and if anybody were able to figure something kind of fishy out, it's you. Well, and you did the right thing. You did the right thing.
Well, thank you. I'm sure I'm going to get some hate mail from him, and that's okay. And, he has a book.
I'm sure.
Books, his next book's coming out.
Speaking of which, I want to let you know that Kevin Day, his book just came out, which is a fictional, but I know that you probably heard him explain it.
Yes.
It's an account of the Nimitz encounter, but he wrote it years ago.
Right.
But he wrote it in a fictional way. Right, right. Uh-huh. It just came out, and it's on Amazon. It came out yesterday.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, he told me he wrote it, a long time ago. I think he just had to work things out in his mind that way, and
right.
Make it fictional.
It was therapy for him.
Right, exactly. Right. So you
and
won't
we,
happen to
and
be...
And we will see you. We'll see. Yeah, I'm coming with Kevin to Phoenix.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, we'll see you next week. Awesome. I can't wait.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we'll have a signed copy of Kevin's book with us for you.
All right. Sounds great. We'll have dinner together or something.
Right.
All right. Okay,
yes,
Dave.
We will. I'll see you next week.
All right. Take care. Bye. Thanks for the call. Okay. We have James calling from Bellevue, Washington. My sister's visiting here. She's about 15 miles away from Seattle. It's beautiful out that way. Welcome to the show, James.
Yeah, thank you, Martin. Thanks a lot for an interesting. Well, I hopped in my car and was driving home listening on Tuesday like usual, and I only caught the tail end of that. But I will tell you that, first of all, I commend you for doing what you did. And I made the mistake of buying his book, and I don't know what's going on there, but I had the exact same reaction reading the book as you seem to have there at the end on the air. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And anyway, I do love your show, and I appreciate the time and the hard work you put in, and that must have been hard.
I didn't want to do it, but but I do appreciate it. So you actually catch my show while you're driving. So on YouTube, is that how you do it? How do you do it?
Yeah, I do it on YouTube with my phone. And so, you know, it's got a Bluetooth, and I just hop in and hit your show, because it's perfect for me in the afternoon here. And I got a little bit of a drive, not bad compared to most people, but then I, you know, I'll catch you every Tuesday.
All right. Well, that's excellent. Hey, what have you ever had a personal sighting yourself?
Yeah, twice I have. the second one was the more sort of spectacular of the two, I think. But and it happened just last December 30th, right before New Year's Eve, and my brother-in-law and I we were all together for dinner that night, and he and I stepped out kind of on the back porch. He smokes, and I wanted to look around outside. And he's a big skeptic, and has been for years. He's teased me for years. And we're standing out there looking around, and my folks live out in a very rural area, and there's no light pollution, and the stars were just spectacular. And I look up there, and there's this brilliant white light, which I don't know if my held my hand out at arm's length. It may have been somewhere, say, an eighth of an inch in size, you know, or maybe a quarter of an inch, quite large. And it was moving from west to east, and it was kind of moving slowly. And I said, "Hey, Tim, look at that." And we both look up, and it was nearly overhead. And we both look up, and then it starts to kind of bend around in a turn to the south, not a like a sharp 90-degree turn, but more of a bend. And then there was a second light there, and the first one merged with that. And then they seemed to stop, and then they moved a little bit further to the south, and then they just sort of disappeared. It was like something sucked the light away, and there was a kind of a red I don't know how to describe it, but I said, "Did you see that?" And he goes, "Yeah, I did." And he was a confirmed skeptic. I mean, he was a debunker, a real jerk about it sometimes when he'd had a couple drinks in. And so several times since then, I've tried to talk to him about it. He won't say a word. He just says, "I don't want to talk about it." And I don't know if it's fear or what it is, but it was an awesome thing. It was really cool. It wasn't a satellite. It wasn't an airplane. It wasn't a helicopter. It wasn't a drone. It wasn't a Chinese lantern. It was way up there, whatever it was, and it wasn't a satellite.
Wow, that's really a great one. And, you know, I hear all the time when someone will say, you know, after a sighting that they don't want to talk about it, you know, at all. You know, I have a friend that he is actually in the antiques and auction business and occasionally listens to the show because he was walking with some friends when he was about 14 years old, and this object was like right over them, and they could feel, he felt it before he looked up. You know, he could feel something or whatever. And his two friends, mm-hmm. no matter how much over the years he's tried to get them to talk about it, they won't speak about it at all. He says they'll just, like, both of them just shut them right out. They that's it. They don't want to talk about it like it never happened. And that happens a lot. That's especially when, you know, someone has, a skeptic mind, and they don't want to, they just want to pass it off as something else. You said you had another sighting. That was really a good one. And we actually have a couple of minutes left, if you can tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah. I was living in Fall City, Washington, which is, I don't know. It's east of here, about 10 miles and east of Seattle. And again, it's a very, rural area. We had a really nice place out there. It was before my boys had grown up, And my younger son and I were out in the backyard, and we were kind of pretend camping. He was only probably 6 years old, I think. And we had the tent set up, and we had a fire in the fire pit, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I was standing there looking north, and I see this brilliant white object coming across, going from, again, it was west to east, fairly low on the horizon, and there, the Snoqualmie National Forest was immediately north of us. There was nothing up there. And it moved in a straight line in a very sort of deliberate fashion. And I was thinking to myself, what is that thing? You know, I thought, man, maybe it's a helicopter or whatever. But it was too big for that, and there was no noise at all. And as it got closer and kind of passed by me, at that point, if I held my hand out, it was probably a good quarter of an inch in size. And I thought, maybe it's a landing light on an airplane or something. But if that's the case, it would have been shining off on the side. And then I noticed that the light had this very weird effect to it. It was like it was confined. There was no glare coming off it at all. It was like it was somehow confined. I don't know how to describe it. Anyway, and then it went off all the way to the east, and then went over the Cascade Mountains, or it hit, you know, went out. And that whole thing, from the time I saw it, I've tried to reconstruct it till the time I lost it, was maybe 6 or 7, maybe 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I couldn't tell how far away it was or how close it was, but whatever it was moving at quite a clip, and it was a very strange looking thing. I don't think it was an airplane. I don't think it was a helicopter. I don't know what it was, but that was my first real sighting.
Yeah, that would get me interested in looking into it, just that alone. You know, it's funny you mentioned about the light, the way it almost seemed like concealed. And there are stories about that. There's actually stories about beams of light. For instance, Charles Hult talks about the beam of light shooting down toward his feet, but it wasn't like the normal beam of light. It was like it contained somehow. So, yeah, there's a lot of really big mysteries in this. So I really appreciate the call, James. It's actually been a pleasure talking to you. I wish you would have been the guest.
Thank you, Martin. Well, listen, I'll hope to meet you sometime.
All right. You take care. All right. Hey, James.
You too. Thank you,
James.
Very much,
just before you hang up, send me an email if you would, because I'm actually going to be visiting out that way. And so send me an email, martin@podcastufo.com. It'd be nice to talk to you a little more. But thanks again, and take
care. Oh, cool. I'll buy you lunch.
All right. Take care.
All right. I'll do it. Bye.
Bye now. Okay, everyone. So we made it. We did it. That's the show for this evening. And thank you so much for your patience. And we'll see you next week at some point. I'll be over at the UFO Congress. I'm not really sure. Just keep your eye on our website, too. I'll post something there when the show's going to go live. And thanks so much, everyone. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."